Suter.
Well, I remember talking to Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions months ago when the Ukraine-Russia situation first started, and he made the comment he felt this war was not going to be over quickly. In fact, it could go on for even years. It's looking as though his prediction was right. We welcome Dr. Keith Suter to the program this afternoon. Hello, Keith. Thank you for your time.
Yes, hello, Brent.
It looks like your prediction was right, Keith. I mean, this is going to turn out to be a rather protracted situation between Russia and Ukraine, is it not?
Yes. So, when we were talking before, I was really looking at this as a two-stage operation. First, by the invasion by the Russians, which we expected the Russians to do quite well in. But then the second stage will be the actual occupation, in other words, trying to maintain control of the country. And I didn't expect Russia to be successful there any more than they were in Afghanistan, for example. But in fact, what's happened is that Russia hasn't even got to first base. They haven't done very well with the invasion of Ukraine. Ukraine has stunned everybody. Mm-hmm. Because of their ability to fight back. And it's been a magnificent showing. I think that Time magazine, which identifies a person of the year, will probably select President Zelensky as that person of the year. He's an actor who's turned out to do a brilliant job. And the Russians control about 20% of the country. They've controlled much of that 20% for the last 8 years, since they occupied Crimea, etc. So they're really not making that much headway. And one of the things that we have learned is that although Putin has boasted about 20 years of modernization of the defense force, he really hasn't modernized Russian tactics. So what we see is that the Russians are still very much reliant on the old-fashioned command and control system, with everything being decided at the top. Whereas countries like Australia or the United States have devolved a lot of local decision-making down to the NCO, the non-commissioned officer level, and that gives much more flexibility. The Russians, by contrast, lack that flexibility, and they've had some terrible situations where their equipment has got bogged down, and they've run out of food, they've run out of fuel. So you know, those of us who thought the Russians would be doing much better in all of this, I think we've been surprised by just how badly things have gone for the Russians.
How much truth do you think is in the stories of Putin not being well?
Well, I was looking at him this morning at his own media conference, at another conference that he was at, and you know, he seemed to be reasonably well. He might have put on a bit of weight, but then a lot of us are in that situation, so he looks a little fleshy, but he was certainly not looking at all unwell. So at the moment, I'm not subscribing to the view that he's going to die in office or that he's got cancer, etc. On the other hand, of course, if he fails in this operation, then he'll either be shot or poisoned.
How long can this operation continue for? Years?
It could go on for years. General Mike Milley, head of the US Defense Force, has said that it could go on for years. As I say, it's a frozen conflict. It's already gone on for 8 years already. And before February 24th this year, there are parts of Ukraine which look just a bit like World War One trench warfare, where the Russians and their supporters in Ukraine were at one side of the trench warfare, and you had Ukrainians linked with Kiev on the other side. So that's dragged on for 8 years. So they could carry on like this for many more years yet, providing Western countries continue to supply Ukraine. And, of course, what is interesting is that although President Biden has backed away from any idea of regime change, there are a number of people on the NATO side who take the view, look, this is a great opportunity just to bleed Russia dry, because the Russians are just losing so many items in their defense force that the longer it drags on with NATO supplying forces to Ukraine, equipment rather than actual personnel, as long as that goes on, then it'll just bleed Russia dry. And Russia's got a host of domestic issues. Obviously, you've got the immediate problem of the labor shortage, this idea that they're calling up reserves, for example, that reflects on the fact that the 140 million people are having difficulty finding people young enough to be in the defence force. Russia actually has a declining population. People have just given up trying to live. They don't have children, etc. So in about 200 years, Russia is going to be empty anyway. So there's a whole problem of actually having enough soldiers ready to fight. Issues of morale. Fragging, of course, went on in Vietnam, where you had American personnel killing their own officers. And the same sort of thing may well be happening on the Russian side now with disillusioned young recruits who never thought they're going to be invading another country. And on top of that, of course, you've got the economic sanctions against Russia, which won't bite immediately, but are certainly putting pressure on Russia. And the last 20 years of progress that Putin has tried to make with integrating Russia into the Western economy, that's all gone out of the window. It's going to take years for Russia to recover. If Putin were to die today, it would take years for Russia to be fully accepted back as a member of the civilized world. And of course, by the same token, Ukraine, which has got this marvelous soil for growing food, Ukraine is going to take years to get back to its role as a major food exporter because of all the unexploded ordnance. You know, my favorite example of this, a problem of unexploded ordnance, was when they redeveloped East Berlin following the unification of the two Germanies. You had a number of workers in East Berlin being killed by bombs from World War II. The bombs had dropped into East Germany in World War II, laid on the ground until a tractor or grader ran over the bomb in 1991, 92. And it'll be the same problem with Ukraine. So much of their land has been wasted because of this war.
NATO has concluded. What will Ukraine get out of the meeting from NATO? What will they get out of NATO this time around?
Well, NATO has made it quite clear that Russia is still their major problem, which of course it was, which is why NATO was created in the first place, to deal with the Soviet Union. And NATO has had a fresh lease of life and also a fresh burst of membership. Two traditionally neutral countries, Sweden and Finland, have been so traumatized by what they've seen of Putin that they have now applied to join NATO. And so there's been an official invitation made to those two countries to become NATO members. And of course, Finland's joining is particularly interesting because it extends the length of the border of the extent to which NATO is confronting Russia. Because Finland, which has already had its own wars with the Soviet Union in the early 1940s, Finland is right up against Russia. So we've now got this vastly increased length of border between Russia and NATO via Finland. And this will add, of course, to Russian paranoia, the fear they're going to be attacked. And Ukraine, I think, will be very much encouraged by the way in which countries have continued the promise of military equipment. For example, as we speak at the moment, there are Ukrainian soldiers on British Army training grounds at Salisbury Plain in England, learning about how to use modern British equipment. So Britain has taken a leading role in sort of standing up to Russia on this matter.
Someone said to me the other day, there is a song and the title or the lyrics, You and Me Against the World. And it seems as though that possibly would be a good song for Xi Jinping and Putin at the moment. It seems as though it's China and Russia against the rest of the world. Is that a fair comment?
No, because there are some countries that are seeing opportunity here. So the Indians, for example, who are supposed to be our ally when it comes to China, the Indians are still very cozy towards the Russians. And Russia is so desperate to be able to sell stuff overseas that they're going to sell their energy at a reduced price, which gives a window of opportunity for India to be able to buy Russian goods, but at a reduced price because the Russians are so desperate for a sale. So it's not just Russia and China against the world, because you've got a number of countries that are saying this is our opportunity to get stuff out of Russia much more cheaply. As I say, India is the best example of that. Indians are playing a double game. They are critical to a certain extent of the Russian invasion, but at the same time, they're breaking the sanctions because they are continuing to trade with Russia.
Dr. Keith, it's always so good to catch up with you. I've got to go to the news with our commitments. So, look, let me say thank you for speaking with us this afternoon. Have a great weekend. And if you're free, we may continue this conversation next week.
Indeed. Thanks very much, Brett.
Thanks, Dr. Keith. That's Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions.